You hear that?
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah. That means
me and my wife. Yeah, I said me and my wife went through the young kid things. Our kid's a little bit older now. We've got the youngest we have is 13, and trust me, it'll get better. It's hard now, but you're having the really fun years.
Oh yeah, no, we love our kids, and I'm sure if you've seen the site, you've seen that we do Kinder Scares. It's for kids and horror and stuff like that. So
yeah,
man, that's what we do. We love our kids. We love taking care of them. We teach them as much stuff as possible. We read to them. We read them as much scary stuff as we can too. So, but tonight we're not talking about kids, are we?
Yeah, but recommend young on that.
Yeah, no, we have to. It's a big market, and it's something that kids need to do is get scared every once in a while.
Oh yeah, especially with. But
like I was saying, we're not here for kids. We're here for you.
That's true. Where are you located, Tom?
I'm in Toronto.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like Canada. I get up to Montreal frequently. I sometimes work for CAE. You know those guys?
No, I don't.
Canadian Aviation Enterprises out of Montreal. They're a large employer you guys got up there, and I sometimes consult with them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Every now and then I find myself in Montreal. I don't mind going during the summer, but I'm not a real big fan of you guys in the winter.
You know what? It's 6 months of winter here. It's crazy.
That's true.
It's freezing right now.
Oh, is it? Well, I guess you don't want to hear the fact that I was in shorts and played tennis today in Texas.
Not at all.
Well, tell me, Colin, let's reverse this on you a little bit. How did you end up such a fan of horror?
How did I end up such a fan?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a long story. It started with movies when I was about six. It was, it was a long time ago. And I went to a Catholic school. We had the church and everything like that. And you know the Bible's full of horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it just flourished. It was movies for a long time, and then I had kids, and I couldn't watch the movies around the kids. So it was reading. And now I've got a massive collection in my brain.
Well, you're the rarity. I mean, it is so rare for people to read anymore because it's all available instantaneously. And of course, that's why we write or we count on people still reading. But unfortunately, it's a dying gift, if you will, because so many people don't read anymore, especially the kids of today. My three kids, I got a 20-year-old in college. I have an 18-year-old that I'm going to visit a college with tomorrow. And then I have the 13-year-old, and none of them read, unfortunately. And I grew up reading vampire stories like there was no tomorrow. So I wish I would have passed it on down. You know, I tried to give them the love of reading, but they have a love of texting and being on the internet and killing zombies. Other than that, there really isn't a love of anything to do with books, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with killing zombies.
No, they need killed. I do it frequently myself.
Now, you're going to have to tell everybody a little bit about Hell's Doctor, because I got some things to say. You know I love the book. You already know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, man, researching it, wow, you had a hard time with that book, huh?
Yeah, there's another way to put it. That was, it started out as a short story, and after I wrote the first, 3,000 words or so, I realized I had something that was unique. I had something I hadn't read before, and something I hadn't seen before, and even heard anything about. And then I decided to put the characters in there, and one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I had 20,000 words, and I wrote the whole thing in about 4 months, start to finish, the first draft. And it's
wow.
Funny because of the reactions I get from people about it. I don't know any other way to put this. I know it's gory. I mean, I'm a gore fan myself, and I know you are. But you got the watered-down version. By the time it got to the book, the beta readers had made me take out several scenes for the good of the quality of the writing. And Granted, it's better. But still, I mean, you got the watered-down version by the time you read it.
And, you know, still, this could be considered extreme horror.
Yes.
But I would say it's a lot like a dark fantasy novel, but with extreme horror, like an extreme horror feel to it, like an Edward Lee-type story.
No, it's definitely dark, and it is extreme. And in your review, you said something about you don't go three pages without somebody getting eviscerated, and that's an accurate fact. I'm not sure you go two pages without that, but, you know, I can't imagine that hell is, and I'm a Christian, and I was raised Catholic like you, actually, but now I go to Methodist, but I can't imagine that hell is a pleasant place, and I can't imagine that there is timeouts where it gets better today than it was yesterday. So as I wrote that, as I wrote through the book, I tried to keep that in mind, that, you know what, this isn't going to be a pleasant place, and we're not going to get out tomorrow. So, yes, we just got eviscerated, but guess what's going to happen tomorrow? It's, you know, more blood and guts.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know what, you take it, it's not all serious. It's like you're not taking the whole subject seriously. You're poking fun when fun needs to be poked, and there's a really strong current of black humor underlying the entire thing, especially with the, you know, I'm going to screw up the character's name, so I'm just going to mention the doctor and his little,
sure.
I guess his lackey, and the shovel that runs through the entire book. I thought that was freaking hilarious. I got to tell you that. And every time he thwomped him on the head, that was great.
I've had more funny comments about that particular scene than any other comment in the book, or any other scene in the book. And it's funny you said it, because everybody says that. So this poor guy, his name is David, this poor guy starts to stutter, gets hit on the head, and then thanks the guy for hitting him on the head with a shovel. And then he can speak. And the whole thing is, even when I wrote it, I would read it to my wife, and she would laugh out loud. And I would start to laugh, and, you know, you don't know if something's funny or not, especially in a situation like that, unless you go funny to the other extreme. I mean, you really try and make it funny. And thank you very much for your comment, but it was designed to be laugh out loud in an otherwise dark place, and thank goodness it worked out real well, especially that particular scene. There's a lot of puns and quips in there also. But by the Morbats mostly, but there's still that particular scene with a guy getting hit with a shovel brings out loud laughter from lots of people, which it was designed to do. So I guess I did okay on that part.
Oh, no, you did great. And the Morbats, the creation of them, they were great. They were, you know what, they were like demented Oompa Loompas almost. And I thought it was just, like, for such a serious subject matter as hell, to have stuff like that, and to, like, you go with every, like, you have interludes, basically, and we explain what the architect is doing. Interlude 2, for example, is the pain babies. And to have that, and then to have all the humor laced inside it, is just, it's both ends of the spectrum, and it works out so well. I really did enjoy it. Now, I wanted to touch on the fact that I've read a couple of reviews where people couldn't even finish the book. And it wasn't for the sake of writing, it was for the sake of the gore level and and the extreme nature of the novel. To me, that's a compliment. Now, I wanted to get your take on it.
I was very surprised by that and taken back by a couple of those. The first review I've had now 6 that I can find reviews, including yours. 5 have been outstanding. I just got one today that was really good. And like yours, it was very solid. The writing was good. The book was good. The story was original. But I've had a couple, like the very first one I got, where the guy just quit reading it in the middle. And I really was stunned by that because, first of all, I got the reviewers from a list of horror reviewers. So it wasn't like I was going to a bookstore and just picking out, you know, some little old lady and asking her, would you like to read this gory horror novel? I went to people that I assumed read this kind of stuff on a regular basis. So that surprised me. And then if you're going to agree to review something, at least in my world or my mind, I would say that you should give it approach it with an open mind and let the author write what he wants to write without your input, okay? And when, in my opinion, when you start saying, I'm not going to read this, then you're putting your input into a book that is already written. Whether or not I wrote it or somebody else wrote it, it's there. And for you to say, well, I'm not going to read it because it does this, unless you have some moral standing, I don't really understand that angle on the book. Of course, it's my book we're talking about, but I'm sure that there's other books like that. So I was very, very taken aback and very surprised by that. But I will say the good news is I think I'm beyond that. I'm beyond that in the fact that the people that have gotten to it now really like it.
Yeah, and you've mentioned to me in email that you're working on the second one, right?
Yes, I am knee-deep into the second one. And it's a completely different book. It doesn't take place in hell. It is a very dark horror novel. I will go back and revisit Mac. I've already outlined two more novels with him. He'll probably be the next one. But I started writing this other one, and I really got drawn into the story. And it's probably going to be out in the spring, maybe the summer of next year. I'm about a third of the way through it. And in a nutshell, without revealing much about it, it is about the passage of evil down through time. I have a problem with loving horror and loving puzzles. And so I have a tendency, as you may have noticed, to put them together. And this next book is going to be very much like that.
Yeah, you had a lot of puzzle, like a huge puzzle aspect to Hell's Doctor. That it kept me guessing throughout the entire thing, and I was trying to break the puzzle. I suck at puzzles. Like, you can put a four-piece puzzle in front of me, and I'll stare at it for a while. But it was intriguing.
I'm a puzzler. I'm a puzzler, there's no doubt about it. And I guess I combine what I'm comfortable with. I'm comfortable with horror and gore, and I'm comfortable with puzzles. So this next one is going to be the same kind of thing, but it's not going to take place in hell, and it's going to be... This one is funny because the next one is funny because we'll get back to Hell's Doctor in a second. This one scares my wife considerably worse than Hell's Doctor because, as she told me the other day, she said this one scares her in the pit of her stomach because she knew Hell's Doctor was just me sitting in a room making up stuff. This one could be going on while we're sitting here talking about it. So that probably is a pretty nice compliment.
That is
other than
a cool
from my wife.
Nice. Can you tell us anything about it?
I knew you were going to ask that, and I've kind of been playing with that all day. What I could tell you without giving it away or breaking it out. First of all, I definitely am going to send it to you to have you read it, probably before I get it published. I might have you get some input from you because I really liked what you said. You understood Hell's Doctor. Hell's Doctor is not really about... a travel through hell, even though that's the surface of it. Underneath, it's about a man trying to retain his who he is in a place devoid of beauty. And you put a little beauty in there, and it makes everybody go nuts. And you understood that. And a lot of people might not get that because they're too immersed in the gore or whatever. But so I definitely want you to take a look at my next one when it comes out. But what can I tell you about it? Can I come back to that in a little while?
Yeah, definitely. We can come back. We don't even have to talk about it because if you're going to send it to me, then people are going to know about it. So,
yes, I'm planning on sending it to you before it comes out. As soon as I get the contract in hand, my publisher has seen the first several chapters and is frothing at the mouth, which is good.
Nice.
So I'm planning on sending it to you, so you'll be the first kid on the block with the new one.
Ah, that's awesome. Now, I do have to ask you, we're speaking about publishers. This book was published by BlackRoseWriting.com.
That's correct.
Sorry, that's the website, but Black Rose Writing. Am
yes.
I right?
Yes.
Now, the book features prominently a story centering around an object, and that object happens to be a black rose.
Yes.
Now, can you give me some background about that? Was it just a coincidence? Was it something that you designed for the purpose of publishing with this company, or do you own the company?
No.
What's going on?
No. Excellent observation on your part. I'll give you kudos. You're the first person to notice that. No, I have nothing to do with the company. I don't own it. It was a pure coincidence. When I started sending, after I wrote this book, my dad, I'll give you some background on the book itself. My mother has some health problems. She's 78 years old, 77 years old. And a couple of years ago, my parents were down for Thanksgiving, and my dad had just taken my mom to a doctor. And he came back and he said, you know what, that doctor was the doctor from hell. And I got thinking about that. I got thinking about what kind of resume would the doctor from hell have? Because, you know, you'll say that was the vacation from hell or something like that. I got thinking about that. What kind of resume would that guy have? So I started writing that, like I told you earlier, you know, a quick short story. Well, one thing led to another, and I knew that I had to have the characters in the book looking for something or searching for something, searching for a way out. And the only thing I could think of to do was to give them something that would give them a chance to get out for a short time. And I started basically just Googling stuff. What could I bring that's kind of dark but kind of pretty? And I came up with a black rose, which they exist. Well, after I wrote the book, I sent it to about 40 different agents and got turned down by all 40 of them, although I will be honest with you, about 10 of them read the first 5 or 6 chapters before turning it down. You know, it's kind of funny. They'll ask for one chapter, then they ask for the second chapter, then it's a cat-and-mouse game, but if you don't have a name they've ever recognized, it's tough to kick that door in. Anyway, so I sent it to those guys, and they turned it down, so I went on. I got on Google or Wikipedia or whatever it was, Google, and I listed small publishers in a 5-state area that produce horror. And one of the ones was Black Rose Publishing. And as I'm looking through it, I said, man, that's got to be an omen. That's all there is to it. So I sent it to them, and I sent out 10, mass mailed 10 different copies of the book to 10 different publishers. Actually, I had 3 offers to publish it. And I picked Black Rose because they were San Antonio, and I knew I could get to the guy if something happened to the book.
Nice.
Well, you were the first guy to notice that.
If I've ever heard of omens, that's it.
But, you know, I was kind of, when I'm looking on my Black Rose Publishing, this has got to be a good omen.
Now, I mentioned in the review that this isn't your run-of-the-mill, gross-out, biologically researched gore. This is balls-to-the-walls, outlandish, over-the-top, wholesale slaughter. And
yes,
I stand by those words, because even flipping through the book, I've been flipping through it all day because I wanted to reacquaint myself with some of them. And Mac Teacher is a fantastic character. I love him. And he has like that because he's a private eye. And he's got that, all the sensibilities. And you managed to bring in a crime feel as well as like the wholesale slaughter. Why, like, I have to ask, why go for the gore when you can go for like the gothic kind of hell story? Because you've got Dante's Inferno is like the model for stories about trips through hell. And then you take the trip through hell idea, you throw in Mac Teacher, who is a great, like, if he was in a crime novel, I would totally believe him completely. But then you take all of these other elements of just nastiness and brutality, and you marry them all together. Why go for the gore as opposed to the, like, a more traditional thing? Because this is your first book, am I right?
That's correct.
Okay, so basically I'm asking you, where'd you get the balls to go all out on your first book?
Oh, man, that's
don't
great.
Don't see that very often. And you know what? We read a lot of stuff at Dreadful Tales, a lot. And I'd say probably a third of it gets reviewed because there's a lot of it just either too tame or we don't like the writing or it just didn't work. We don't like to review books that we really don't like. We feel like it's an injustice to us and to everybody else. But, you know, it's important that we do it. And sometimes we do put up negative reviews, but sometimes we get these authors that write balls out craziness on their first book, and you're one of them. And I want to know, like, for lack of a better way of saying it, where do you get off doing that? It's crazy. You took a chance, a huge chance.
It is, and I knew that I would turn off a fair amount of the population right there. There, you know, you can write a thriller, or you can write a dark thriller, or you can write a horror novel, or you can write a dark horror, ball-to-the-wall horror novel. And I thought about all of those. I thought about making it nicer and making it less gory. But I didn't feel that the story was accurately told unless it was told from Hell's viewpoint. And even though the book is a misnomer right off the bat, it's not really about Hell's Doctor. As you know, it's about Hell's Detective. And that was the other title, by the way. But Doctor just sounded better. So, and in the end, of course, it is about the Doctor, but it's all about Mac. And the thing about that is as I'm writing it, I would back off a little bit, and then I basically chastise myself. So why are you backing off? Why are you afraid to put in there what you want to put in there? John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy were not nice guys. They didn't back off, and not that I'm comparing myself to them, but they're not going to be in a place that would back off in dealing with them. And for me to back off or to gray out some of the red and the green and the yellow and everything else that's going on, I think would be a disservice to the world that I was trying to create. I wanted to create something that was colorful. And by colorful, I mean something that when the reader read it, he saw more than black vomit and murky windows. He saw a world devoid of beauty that constantly hammered everybody down because there's only one thing to do, and that's try and get out of there or try and get lower. And to do that, I don't think it would be done in a nice manner. And instead, when I was writing some of this stuff, I would look at it. I write it in the morning. I'd look at it the next day, and I'm like, you know what? I left a line out of that made it nastier, made it harder, made it have an edge that I am trying to make here. And so I just decided when it was done, you know what? I know that there's going to be some people that are going to look at me and say, what's wrong with you? And I wasn't going to be afraid of that. I was just going to write the kind of novel that I thought Hell would produce. I say produce, and the kind of hell that it would be, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And for the extent that you went with the extreme violence and gore and stuff like that, you really, you captured it. You captured what I would think hell would be like. And you've
That's exactly what I was trying to do.
And you've populated it with real life bad guys, I guess you could say. You've got Bernie Madoff in there. You've got, you mentioned Ted Bundy and all those guys. You've got all of these guys in these rooms getting tortured, getting slaughtered, or being the ones torturing and slaughtering. And then you've got this one character that stuck with me, Daisy May.
Yeah.
Now, this is a girl who goes from being sweet and innocent, kind of loving, maybe Southern accent type girl, to eventually, and I don't think I'm giving anything away by this because I think, honestly, it's a selling point, but by the end of it, she's chewing her own nipples.
Yeah, she seems to get kind of anxious throughout the novel. I've had a couple of people mention her to me.
And I think it's because she's, to me, it came across as like she knew that this character was smarter than her, and she knew that he was going to go somewhere and he was going to beat her, and this physical reaction to it was kind of the way that you were, like you said, she kind of, I don't know, she gets anxious, she gets nervous, because now what happens to her if they beat her, right?
That's correct, and that's exactly what it was about. She starts off, I think, chewing a piece of straw, and then she starts on her fingernails, and then her fingers, and one thing leads to the other, so she's got a hole in her breast where her nipple used to be. And one of the first beta readers that read it for me said, that character's unbelievable. She just gets more and more nervous every chapter that you see her, and it's because she's afraid of failing. And then I went back and added some more to her to make her even more afraid of failing, and that's exactly what it is about her. She knows she will be promoted to one of the higher levels if she fails. and she knows Mac is smarter than her. So regardless of what she throws at him, she knows he is probably going to top. And that gives her anxiety that eventually gets to the point where she's chewing off parts of her body.
Yeah. And I tell you, I was pretty knocked. Like, I was knocked askew by that. That was kind of, it came out of nowhere because you don't generally see stuff like that. You see people talking about, or like they do it with dialogue. You never see like prop gags or physical comedy or even physical like gore to an extent with novels, because they want you to see the atmosphere. They don't really want you to see the characters. They want you to feel the characters, but they don't want you to see them. Now with this book, you gave us sight. You gave us something to look at. And you can feel like the heat and the overwhelming darkness in hell, but you also gave us something to look at. And I appreciate that. As a reader, I do appreciate that, because I want to see things. If I wanted to go watch a movie, I'd go watch a movie, but I want to read a book, and I want to see what's going on through the character's eyes and through the author's eyes.
And I'm the same way. When I read something, of course, I'm a voracious reader, probably like every other horror writer in the world. I read every day. And when I find something that is either, a single verb instead of, or a single adjective instead of drawing it out and really giving me that picture, then I know that I have been cheated. And I never intended to do this. Now, you know, this is my first book, so the writing isn't near what, the writing at the end of the book is better than the writing at the beginning of the book, in my opinion. Okay, and I've probably read it 7 or 8 times just looking for errors. But because I'm a beginner, I'm learning. And what I learned was, that I'm carrying on to my next one, is that you really have to present that picture or the reader gets bored. I know I do. If you don't, if all you do is describe black vomit, you have not done your job. You have to give them, just like you said, something to see, something they can touch. Because on television, they can see it and they just use their eyes. But when you read it, you use your mind and you use all of your senses. If the scene is well drawn out, then you're going to be able to touch it, see it, and best of all, you're going to remember it. The best compliment I've gotten about this book is the guy, the character that gets hit on the head with a shovel. People remember that. That is not only funny, it is original enough that it carries with you. And you can see this poor guy. He's lost a couple of his vertebrae, and to make a sense, he needs to be reconnected on his spine. Even though it's an over-the-top, ridiculous thought, the guy gets hit on the head with a shovel and thanks the guy. Well, you can see that. You would never see something like that if I skimmed it over or skipped that part of the description. And I just felt that in my first novel, I wanted to do something that you could literally touch, that you could see, and that hopefully, like any good author, you just want the guy to remember you when he walks away, when he puts the book down.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've purged a lot of my books, and this one stayed. And I consider myself a very, very picky reader. I will finish every book. Like, I've only ever not finished 2 books, and I won't tell you what they are, but actually, no, let's go with, no, yeah, you know what, it's 2, because I finished one of them. Yeah, but this one stayed, because it's got that feel to it. It's got that, like, it's not even a B-movie. It's like a grade Z horror. It's something out there that you can always go back to. It's like your basket cases or your, I don't know, like some of the greatest gore movies out there that you can always go back to, that you'll never take off your shelf, even if you're selling all your movies. You just say, I'm keeping this one. This is kind of,
I'm keeping these 5, that's right.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm saying, I never move. Go ahead.
Oh, I need to ask you about The Architect.
Okay.
Because, now The Architect, have you read much Clive Barker?
Oh, yeah, he's one of my favorites. Oh, absolutely. Everville is one of the best books I've ever read in my life.
Have you read The Hellbound Heart?
Yes.
Okay. The Architect reminded me of that main character. Now, I'm going to, actually not main character, supporting character, but the foundation of the novel. and I'm probably going to butcher it because it's been a long time since I've read it.
I haven't read it for 20 years.
Okay. Well, how about you explain The Architect then? Because I found it to be intriguing that he was behind the scenes doing all this stuff. You've got the doctor and Mac as main focus, but The Architect has designed all of this, has created all of the pain and the suffering in hell. I need you to explain him, because I wanted, the only qualm that I have with the entire book is that I wanted him to be more focused on. I loved that character. He was quiet, he did his thing, but he did it to such efficiency that everybody suffered.
The Architect. Let's see. That's a good question, too. The Architect came from the fact, in the first draft of the novel, The Architect wasn't even in there. And that was because I'm reading to my writers group, and they're telling me that I have to build the world, which is what the interludes with The Architect obviously were all about. You don't know what my hell is like, so I have to paint you that picture. And the first time I wrote the novel, the first interlude was told in almost an ambiguous third person. I didn't really have a main character. I had these guys doing this and this guy doing this and everything coming together to make the world. So I realized when I read it the first time that I needed a designer. I needed somebody that would stand up and ultimately take responsibility for all the pain and dismemberment and gore and grief given out there. But I didn't, at the same time, want to state the obvious. I didn't want to use the word Satan in the novel at all. I didn't want to bring that character to mind because he doesn't need to be there. And I didn't want to turn off any potential readers by going that far, that extreme. So I needed somebody that would be in the background, but be the overall designer. And the word architect came to me one day as I was going through. I rewrote it more with one person doing it all. And then I started to like the character. I started to like what I could do with the character, being that one guy's in charge and he's almost a rock star. And that's how he developed. And look, at the end of the book, obviously, he's in it up to his neck, which is what his job is. His job is to design, keep an eye on the whole program while everybody else is all worried about their little world. He's worried about the entire place. And without his character, that book, I think, would have suffered tremendously. He really helps bring it together and give you someone that you realize really has an idea in mind what this place should look like, rather than it being all over the place, just happenstance. We built some here, we built some there. No, there's really a design here, and it would take an architect or an engineer or something like that to design that kind of thing, and that's really how his character developed.
So do you have a background in that kind of thing? Do you have a background in I guess, architecture or anything like that? You said you consult.
Yes, I do consult, but I built a couple of homes, but not really. I really don't have a design in architecture or a background in anything like that. I needed somebody in charge that was not going to go out with a knife and cut everybody's head off like everybody else in the book. He had to be in charge, and above all that, but yet everybody had to know he was the guy. And the only way to do something like that is to take somebody that steps back from the action and oversees it. And that's how he developed. And I love the name The Architecture, as soon when I got started on it. And I just kept it and evolved that character.
Now, one of the reasons why I asked you that is because you have these giant machines in the book that remind me so much of The Hellbound Heart. And I got to tell you, The Hellbound Heart is one of my favorite novellas by Clive Barker, followed up very closely by The Books of Blood, which I consider them all to be novellas, not short stories.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just such a brutality, but there's a beauty to the way that you created these machines. these things. The I can't even remember what you called them. But they just, like this, I think it was the secondhand skin ripper.
The hand-me-down skin rippers.
There you go, the hand-me-down skin ripper. That was incredible. I could imagine these things as graphic novels or as, like, low-budget horror movies with great special effects. Where did you come up with those things? And like, I mean, they obviously serve a purpose, right? They're there to cause pain and suffering and sometimes to terminate, which is another question I want to get back to. But to have these machines, what was that facilitating for you?
The hand-me-down skin rippers is a basically a play on ripping people's skin off. And I say that because it's not funny, obviously, but it's been done so many times. So to stay in the spirit of the novel, the first time I wrote it, it was the slice off an ear skin rippers, and they were slightly askew. They didn't work quite right. And that didn't work for me. I wanted something that, you know, since everything there has to be a place for it to go. We can use the old machines, because one of my favorite lines in that book is by the architect. He says, every failure is a success, because you can use every failure to eviscerate someone somewhere. And and I thought about that. And you know what? So what if the first machine we made didn't work? We hand it down to the next guy, and he's like a pair of hand-me-down jeans. It just happens to be a skin ripper, so it's a hand-me-down skin ripper. And that's how it led to some of those. My favorite machine in there was the organ. Do you remember the organ?
Yes. It was the giant rolling machine that, oh, man.
The guy was playing the organ, and he had the character stuck on
the top
of the pipe.
On the ceiling, right?
No, they were stuck on top. No, not that. That was a good one, too. But no, this one was the organist. He had the character stuck on top of the pipes, and when he'd push on the keys of the organ, they'd scream.
They would scream, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that
was
great.
Well, thank you.
You know what? That kind of stuff is really creative. You don't see that kind of stuff at all. It goes back to the balls to the wall, like, You pulled out all the stops with this. And now that you're reminding me of it, yeah, I've got a huge smile on my face, because that was just, wow.
Yeah, that was an owl. I read that scene to my wife, and she says, where did you come up with this stuff? But that was one of my favorites, because we even arranged the altos on one end and the sopranos on the other end, and they screamed together. That was my favorite machine. Some of this stuff, I think that a lot of technology could be used in more than one way, which I guess is a sign of anybody with an imagination. Like you said, I have a twisted imagination. And a lot of these things are just, you know, they're just regular machines that we could just adjust or take a bolt out or two and see what we get and use them in a special way. The organist was my very favorite machine of them all.
That's awesome. It was, you know what, like all the machines in it, they were all crazy. They were all like out there, completely out there, but you made them so visceral. You made them so, like, they're tangible. You can see them while they roll by. There was one nearing the end that was just essentially a rolling mass of flesh, was it not?
Yes.
It was comprised of several different. Anyways, the question that I wanted to get to, and the reason why I'm asking you about the machines, is because I did have a question about the book. Now, basically, when you're in hell and you've been tortured, you're being slaughtered indiscriminately, when is there an end point? Like, you know where I'm getting at? When you've had your arms cut off, and you've had your legs cut off, and you've had your tongue cut out, and you've been chewed on, and you've been, like, violated by these morbats. Incredibly insatiable morbats. Where is there an end point? Is it when you're ground into pretty much mush and thrown in the river Styx, or did you ever, because you pretty much didn't put that in the book. It's left up to the reader to kind of assume, and what I'm assuming is that there is no end. You're a living mush on the ground.
Yeah, I gave two outs, but not direct outs. One, there's a there's a chapter in there about a lazy river where everybody just throws all the old body parts and they just go around and around and people bob up and down. Do you remember that scene?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to when I said the river Styx.
Yeah, there's a river where everybody just bobs around. And then there's also a scene where people are just, they become part of the walls when they get tired of torture and they shove them into the wall or shove them into a place and come back to them years later or eons later. And, but I really didn't want to go there. I really didn't, by definition, everything I've ever heard about hell was that it is unending, that there really isn't a way out. And I really didn't want to give hope where there wasn't any hope. This book is a little bit about hope. There's no doubt about that. The main character, Mac, has enough hope to keep him going and to try and stay human through the whole thing. But the rest of them, there's no hope. They're just trying to get to a place where somebody's not going to beat on them so much. And I kind of leave that down, the ending of that, up to the reader's imagination.
Yeah, I really dug that part. Like, I dug the idea that you were leaving a lot up to the reader. And you did. You did leave a lot up to the reader, because there was also, there's scenes with the more senior people in hell, the lower beings, where they had all these different powers, but like you kind of left it, you left the reader guessing, because you take one guy and you poof, he's gone, he's out, not in the scene anymore, and then you're waiting, like there was an air about it, you're waiting for him to come back, waiting to see when he would show up and do something absolutely nasty, and then you flip the script on everything. I'm not going to give away the ending. I don't want to talk about Annika or anything like that, because I think people should definitely, they should read this, and they should read it all the way through. It's violent, it's gory, it's bloody, it's brutal, but it's a good piece of horror fiction, especially for people who like body horror or anybody who really just digs their horror visceral. And I remember, actually, I got a comment on it on the review by someone named Midnight Reader, and she dug the use of the language that I use, the balls to the wall quote, and like it's that kind of thing that I really think people should check out. It is balls to the wall. It's out there. Now, I wanted to touch on some other things outside of Hell's Doctor. You mentioned you asked me at the beginning of this chat how I got into horror. Now, I want to know how you got into horror. You mentioned vampire books, and personally, I don't like vampires. I don't like vampire books. I never have. The only vampire book that I actually really, really enjoyed was Nightface by Lydia Peaver.
Oh, yeah.
She's a Canadian author. It's a great book. It's very gothic. It's very dark, but it's also, the vampires are brutal in it, and that's how I think vampires should be. When you marry eroticism in with a vampire lore, that I can deal with, because I like erotica. It's part and parcel with horror as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
But how did you come into it? How did you come into horror?
I grew up immersed in vampires. There's another word for it. My older sister, when I was 12 or 13, I can still remember this, and I'm 52 years old. I was 12 or 13. She was afraid I was going to end up joining a cult and running away from home, because all I did was live and breathe vampires. I researched them. I entered contests about them. I went to see every movie. I snuck into R-rated movies. I did everything I could if it said the word vampire on it. And I guess that really turned me on back then. But I said, I don't read much about vampires anymore. I think it's been extremely overdone. And I don't do werewolves and I don't do zombies. And for the same reason, everybody seems to get on the boat, and the boat sails out of the harbor as far as I'm concerned. And I much prefer the more original stuff, things I haven't seen before. But there's no other way to say it. I was immersed in that stuff as a kid. And I started writing the horror stuff back in maybe the 80s, and got my first sale of a horror story in the early 90s to a national magazine. And ever since then, it's come in bits and pieces. But it's always been, I I'll sit down and write a quick flash fiction or something that just comes to me. But I just really like the fact that with horror, you have two ways you can scare somebody. You can either create a monster that they haven't seen before, or you can terrify them by having the lights out and leaving them in the room and them hearing something in the room but not knowing what it is. So there's psychological horror, or there's the visual horror when they see this thing coming out of the wall. I like that fact, I guess, and it makes it easy for me to write about it because it really doesn't have any rules. A lot of writing has rules, but horror writing doesn't seem to me to have rules. If you want to sit down and write 10,000 words about something you made up as nasty and gross as you want to, you can call it a horror novel. There, nobody may read it, but you still have the ability to write it. Whereas, if it's a love story, you got to have the boy and the girl, they meet each other and they fall in love and have a fight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have a lot of pre-programmed scripts, and I don't believe horror has a script if you're willing to try it. Now, again, I'm a first-time author. I understand that. I've got a long way to go, but I like the fact that horror to me has very few boundaries.
You know what? You make mention of the fact that you're a first-time author and you have a long way to go. And
yes.
I'm not an author by any means. I've tried writing, and my writing is painful. It's like a 13-year-old girl writing about black butterflies. It's terrible. But to hear someone say, someone who, like, you have quite possibly one of the most well-versed ways, like, you speak very honestly, and you speak very freely about your fandom in horror. And to me, being, like, that you have one book out, that doesn't matter. It's your fandom that makes you a horror author. You don't have a long way to go. You've been there. You've done that. Like, if I actually sat down and nailed out something good, I wouldn't say, okay, now I've got to go pay my dues as a horror author. No, I've been reading books for a very, very long time. I've been a fan. I've been a proofreader. I've been an editor, even when I haven't been asked to be. And that's what makes us, that's what pays our dues. So I hate to hear you sell yourself short and say that you have a long way to go, because you don't. You got published, which is a lot more than a lot of people can say. And you published a book that was good, which is a lot more than a lot of people can say. And to do it in the horror genre, like you get horror movies that are out there in the theaters, and you walk out there and it costs $2, $3, $4, $5 million to make, and it's a stinker. And it's because everybody thinks making a horror movie is easy. But making a horror movie is not easy. Writing a horror novel is not easy. Writing anything isn't easy. But I'd say doing an effective job, like making an effective horror novel, is not easy. And you came up with Hell's Doctor and this whole scheme of things. Like, there's so many different things going on in the book. And that's not easy at all. So... And especially coming from someone who's such a huge fan of vampires, and then you went and wrote your first book, and it wasn't about vampires at all. It's totally outside of the realm of that. You don't have a long way to go. You're there.
Well, thank you. That is the nicest thing, I'll be honest, the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me, and I mean that honestly. I was just at a book signing this weekend down in Austin, Texas, and I sold... 10, 12 books, something like that. I signed them. It was wonderful. I'd never been a signing. And it's weird because I don't know any other way to put this. I just don't, when you say who's the writer in the room, I'm not going to raise my hand. I think that it's a craft, and I really appreciate what you said. You just made my day. I think it's a craft, and I'm learning the craft. I think I had a good idea. I think my next one's a really good idea, too. It's something you haven't seen before. And I said, you just made my day, Colin. I know where to put it. Have trouble using my name and writer in the same sentence for some reason.
Oh, man, you did it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't believe in the Boys Club of Horror. I don't believe that you have to pay your dues and someone should mentor you. And I think the best authors out there are the ones who write for themselves and for their fans. And you obviously wrote this. You wrote this for yourself because you put it out. It was extreme, and you've had reactions where people haven't finished the book. Like that, as a reviewer, I don't have an allegiance to pretty much anybody at all. But when I read the review, I totally understood where the guy was coming from. I really did, because there were points in this book where I was like, oh my God, that's gross. And I don't get swayed that easily. So I understood where he was coming from. And if I didn't have my obsessive nature where I have to finish a book, it would have been very hard. But when you get to the point where you've gotten halfway through the book and you look at it again, you find yourself completely addicted to it, addicted to the violence, addicted to the gore. And it's definitely something that it's not, you can't really take too seriously either, like I said before, because, I mean, you're creating this entire huge, vicious place. How can you take that seriously? I mean, we've got things on the internet like two girls, one cup,
yeah,
goatee, things like that. Come on, those are real life things. This is Hell's Doctor. This ain't going to happen.
That's
purely entertainment. And I mentioned the Ed Lee aspect because you do have a lot of Ed Lee in here. Have you ever read? You have to have read Ed Lee, The Big Head.
Yes.
Anything like that?
Yes, probably. It's been a while, but yes.
Yeah, and that stuff, fan favorites, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you have coming up, because I guess we're going to see the two different faces of Lee Jordan, huh?
Yeah, you're going to see this next one is designed to scare you at a different level and not to gore you out so much, even though there's plenty of that in there, but it's not every three pages. This is a story that builds from ages ago with a mystery involved, like me and my puzzles. I love me and my puzzles. And it is a man that is caught up in the passage of evil down through time and how he, what they're trying to do, what's going on with it. So it will scare you at it, or I know scare you, maybe awaken you at a different level than Hell's Doctor, even though I will say this, that Hell's Doctor has turned out to be so much fun since I published it that I knew I was going to go back to it anyway. When I approached the publishers with it, I said, this is a trilogy. I have two more already outlined. The same character, the same place, and where they're up to their neck in all this fun and gore and stuff going on down there. And the fun part about those is who I get to put in there.
Yeah, a lot of the cast of characters, you're going to expand on that, and I'm really excited about it.
That's correct. The council members, they were put in the book only to lead you to the second book. They're all going to figure prominently in the next two books. But this one, the one I'm writing now, it's a different kind of book, but it is a different kind of fear. And it isn't until the last, it's about a third of the way written but completely outlined. And it wasn't until the last, I'm going to say, 30 pages that I really started to get into the story and started to get into the gore and the fear that's starting to come out. I think this is going to be something that will promote conversation of possibility, which is always good.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, it's important in the horror genre as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was speaking to an author. She writes romance and paranormal romance and stuff like that. I was speaking to her today, and she said that she's writing about shadow people. And immediately I went, oh, I hate shadow people. Hate them. But she's not writing about, like, I don't know, giant tentacled monsters that come after you and stuff like that. Because that, I think, is cool. It's like comic book stuff. It's wicked.
It's comic book.
I love that kind of stuff. Shadow people. Shadow people. Ugh. Or yep. Like you said, between the things that you see or the things that you don't see, the occult or things that are in your face. I love the occult. Scares the crap out of me.
It scares the crap out of
you. Yeah, Jay Anthony.
Go ahead.
Amityville Horror.
Yeah. No, that was absolutely terrifying, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What was the other one? I just watched the other night, The Exorcist. That was absolutely terrifying.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely my favorite book out there. And I have a first edition hardcover of it. I have the mass market paperback I've got 6 different versions of the film. Like, it's my favorite story. It's over the top. It doesn't make any sense if you if you take it apart. But the supernatural element of it is just terrifying.
It is terrifying. There's no other word to describe it. And I guess that's what this second one, I am building a very terrifying novel. I'm trying to, of course, it said we won't compare at all to The Exorcist. I'm not trying to. But it is a different kind of fear that I'm trying to convey upon the reader. I said, I think the people that wouldn't finish Hell's Doctor will probably finish this one, even though I'm not really writing it for that. I'm not writing it for that reason at all. I don't care if you didn't finish it. That was your choice. Because I've written it, and I'm very proud of Hell's Doctor. At first, I had a pen name on it, but after I was about 50% into the book, I'm like, you know what, this is good. I'm going to put my own name on it.
Nice. Yeah, how did that feel when you'd saved the document with your actual name on it?
There's no comparison to the first time you get your book in the mail. There's just no comparison. It was a case where it arrived out on on my driveway in a box, and I walked up there and I picked it up and carried it out. I didn't even know what it was. I thought it was something for my wife, and I sat down, opened it, and I was just stunned. There's just no feeling like that, and it's a feeling I remember. But I was also pleased with the product, and I guess maybe to me personally, that's why I'm not afraid of the balls to the wall, whole top outlandish, over the top wholesale slaughter, to quote you directly, because that's what I thought goes on in hell, and what I imagined it to be, I decided to write it, and I've had said I've really been very pleased with the reaction, people that work their way through it, that read through it. I have not had one negative review, not one, since the very first couple where the guy refused to read it. Since then, the reviews have been incredibly strong. I've been shocked, actually.
Yeah, but you can, I just, as an aside, you can see where that guy's coming from with the visceral gore and stuff like that, I'm sure. When you were writing, you probably grossed yourself out a couple times.
There was a couple of scenes I thought about toning down, and then I said, you know, it's no different, some of these scenes, than it is if I was describing dissecting a human being in one of those books that do that. I mean, it's a different kind of gross out. It just depends on what really gets to your particular stomach. And yes, I understood exactly what it is. I don't fault him or anyone else that doesn't want to work their way through it. But by the same token, I don't wish to back off anymore. I'm glad I made it the way I made it.
Oh, yeah, I am too. I think if you had backed off, it probably would have cheapened it. The fact that you went that one step further really sold it on me. And like I said, I couldn't actually read the entirety of The Big Head because it was too there. And I'm probably going to lose points in the horror genre right now, but I actually haven't finished The Girl Next Door by Jack Ketchum.
I've never read that.
Oh, it's phenomenal from what I've read.
I hear it's
but
great.
There were just some scenes in there that just devastated me. So you get one step too far, and then you get one not enough steps forward. I think it was the perfect march, I guess you could say.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased you liked it. I loved your review. And I love the fact that actually it's been very nice talking to you. Technology is good and bad. It's great to trade emails, but it's also nice to talk like human beings occasionally.
Oh, yeah, and talk I can. Wow.
Me too, as you noticed.
And you know what? If it has to do with the horror genre, I'm there. I wanna read everything in the entire world. I grew up with books all around us. Like, we should have had a couch built of books. And my wife and I, we've covered our house. Like, we have to go out every couple months and buy a new bookcase. Because it's just crazy.
Does she read this kind of stuff?
No, my wife doesn't read genre stuff. I'm the only one who reads the genre. My wife reads better books. I would say. Stuff that makes you think, let's say.
I'm glad she reads.
Yeah. Pardon?
Very glad.
Yeah, and you know what? The kids read, and I think it's important for people to read because it's it should the way it should be, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. I completely agree.
Well, I'm thoroughly looking forward to this next book now. If you're going to switch gears on it, when authors do that. I mean, John Everson, he did The 13th, and it was, I actually quoted that as like reading a killer rock record. And then you get something like one of his next books was Siren, which was touted around the internet as being erotic horror. And you know what? It really was. It was great. It was phenomenal. But to hear the different voices, it's great. Because if you were to write Hell's Doctor and then Hell's Doctor 2 and then Hell's Doctor 3 and every single one was just as brutal as the last or more brutal, I mean, you'd run out of ideas, right? Eventually.
Eventually.
Yeah, and you say that you've got two lined up. Like two outlets.
I do. I have two more with these, with Mac Teacher in Hell in the same place, with puzzles and eviscerations and bloodletting and all that other stuff that goes with it down there going on. They're going to be just as brutal. But I wanted to step back and do something because I didn't want to get labeled. One of the reviewers labeled me a splatter author or something like that. I don't remember the exact words, which is fine. I don't care about that. But I didn't really want to write only for splatter fans. I want to write for horror fans, and I want to write what I want to write. And I would definitely want to go back to Matt Teacher. I like his character way too much to leave alone. And I like the world I built there way too much to leave it alone. But this next one is going to be a step back, scare you by the lights being out and you hear breathing in the room kind of fear on this next one. So it's definitely different, and it's coming along very well right at the moment. I'm very pleased with it so far. And again, I'll know a lot more about it in another 6 months or so, but it's probably 30% of the way complete right now.
That I'm looking forward to. Just no shadow people, okay?
No. No, that's not my style, not at all. Don't worry about that, Kyle.
Awesome. Hey, and I remembered that character in The Hellbound Heart. What I do when I'm talking to people is I walk around the house. My kids are asleep upstairs, so I'm just pretty much trying to piss everybody off by walking.
Uh-huh.
It was the engineer.
Oh, that's right. Engineer. That's right. I forgot about that.
He created
everything. I read that book probably 20 years ago. I say 20 years, when I was younger. And that's right. He did have a character called the engineer in it, didn't he? I remember that.
Yeah. And that was the only thing he said in the entire story was, "I am the engineer."
That's right. I'm the engineer. I remember that. Yes.
That's what the architect reminded me of.
Well, thank you. That's nice to even be compared like that. To evoke a memory like that is wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And this threw me back a lot. But I'm going to have to call it here.
No problem.
Check on the kids and everything. It was absolutely wonderful talking to you. And I expect that I will be talking to you again when your next book drops.
Excellent. I said I will stay in touch with you. I said it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for interviewing me. What will you do? You'll transcribe this in the next couple of weeks or so and put it on the website? How does that go?
Oh, no. People are going to hear you. And it will be up in a couple of days.
Oh, is that right? The voice will be on there?
Yeah. Actually, that's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Cool.
You don't do a lot of promotion. You don't do a lot of social media.
I'm trying. I'm not good at it. There's no other way to put it. I bought some advertising on a couple of places, but here we go again with what you and I were talking about earlier. I don't know exactly. I'm not good at that. That's all there is to it. I don't know exactly how to get the word about Hell's Doctor out there. I've got a banner here or a banner there, but a banner doesn't tell you about the book. And I don't really know how to go about doing this. I've got a website, hellsdoctor.com, which gets visited every now and then. But this is definitely my weakest area, how to get people to look at it like you did. I definitely think there's an audience for this book, but I don't know how to reach them. That's all there is to it.
Well, you know what? Let's get people to look at it then.
Thank you very much. Right. I would appreciate that.
That's no problem. But I'm going to let you go here. It was
fine
talking to you. Like I said, I want to talk to you again when the next one drops.
I will talk to you soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
Good night. I hope your family feels better.
Oh, they will.
Bye.
Thanks, man. Bye.